When Haridas Thakur was thrown in jail, that happens to devotees a lot. They get thrown in jail. I was telling the devotees yesterday morning, most of you weren't here, I think. You were here, of course. You're always here. Labangla Tika was one of the early devotees. 1968 she joined, and then she was distributing books back in the Los Angeles airport when it was illegal. And she used to get arrested. And she said it was really a horrible experience being arrested, because they would put her in handcuffs in the airport and drag her through the terminal and throw her in the police car. And all the way to the jail, they would say really mean things to her. And then they'd have to take her out from LAX all the way to San Fernando, where the women's jail was. And then while they were booking her, which took a few hours, they would handcuff her to the bench, and she would look like a common criminal. And then she'd have to stay in all night till the devotees would come bail her out. So this happened a lot, and it was a miserable experience. But one night when she was arrested for distributing Prabhupada's book, she had this realization that she had been destined to be grabbed by the Yamadutas and go to hell, and be dragged to hell by the Yamadutas. But because of her service, she was getting this token only, very small token, being taken to the police station, and all her karma was being burned off. Yes, twindra gopa mata vendra mahosa karma, bandhanu rupa palabhajanama tunoti, karmani nirdahati kintucha bhakti bhajam, govindamari purushamta mahambhajami. Lord Brahma says, for someone who's engaged in devotional service, all that heavy karma, which is... There's so much karma. How much karma is there, Vaisheshika? How much karma is there? We were hearing in Vrindavan this year from a devotee who was studying the Yoga Sutras. There's some description of different kinds of karma. And there's so much karma accumulated from one's sojourn in the material world from a time immemorial that it has to be stored during our certain lifetimes, because we can't experience all that karma in one lifetime. So it's set aside in these hard drives or something, or warehouses. Like we have these, we have to get more and more storage. We just put in two more tough sheds out there to put all the things that we actually need around the temple. And so it's like that, and when we come into a lifetime, there's a kind of accumulated karma that I can't experience or burn off in this one lifetime. Not possible. So it's all stored away in these sheds, you know, waiting for, I might have alligator karma, and it's still waiting to be experienced, and I have to go through that. But someone is engaged in bhakti bhajam, all that karma is being diminished. And it's described that it's all destroyed. There are different kinds of karma. Some karma is in a subtle form. Some is in seed form. Some of the seed is already sprouting. Some of the seed is sprouted, and it's grown into a tree. And some of the tree has already given fruit. And all those types of karmas are destroyed, and they're all different kinds. They're at different stages. But Jiva Goswami has said, it's just like if you're making a garland. Anybody here make garlands? Well, we may need you to make garlands. When you make garlands, when you make a petal garland, you line up all the petals, and then take a long needle and you put it through. So he said it's like when you're stringing a needle through 1,000 lotus petals, and it strings through. It goes through one after another if you looked at it in slow motion, but when you put it through, it just goes through all at once. So similarly, all the different layers of karma that we have, they get destroyed one after the other by the process of bhakti. But it looks like just one thing, one fell swoop, by taking the process of Krishna consciousness, all that karma is destroyed. This is the power of chanting the holy name of the Lord. How is everybody? Do you need to stand up? Anyone need to stand up and move around? You're okay? Okay. Zafu's good, huh? We have more Zafus here. Please, this is a new experiment to make everyone comfortable. If you have a Zafu and you sit on it, you'll be able to sit for much longer. Okay, now I have a special treat for you. Does anybody know where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is in the Srimad Bhagavatam? Let's find Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Some pundit out there is already spouting shlokas. Panditji? Okay, I've got Prahlad Maharaj. What else you got for me? Okay, and who's that? Karabhajana Muni, right? 11th canto? Eleven? Okay. Dainini, you want to hear about Lord Chaitanya and the Srimad Bhagavatam? Okay. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskritya. Naram Chaiva Narottamam. Devam Sarasvatim Vyasam. Tato Jaya Mudiraye. Nashta Praeshu Bhadreshu. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Bhagavati Uttama Shloke. Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtaki. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Dena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Pishtam Stapitam Dena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Uta Parakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvetam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shivishakan Vitamscha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prashtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prashtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Tinamine Sri Barshabana Videvi Daitaya Kripabdaye Krishna Sambandha Vijnana Dayane Prabhave Namaha Madhuryo Jvala Premadya Shri Rupa Anugha Bhaktida Shri Gora Karuna Shakti Vigrahaya Namostute Namaste Gauravani Sri Murtaye Dinatarine Rupa Anugha Virudhapa Siddhanta Dvanta Harine Namo Gora Kishoraya Sakshad Vairagya Murtaye Vipralambara Sambode Padambu Jayate Namaha Namo Bhakti Vinodaya Sakchidananda Namine Gora Shakti Swarupaya Rupa Anugha Varayate Gora Virvava Bhomestvam Nirdesa Sajana Priya Vaishnava Sarvabhoma Shri Jagannathaya Te Namaha. Vanchakalpatrubhyascha Krupasindubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Namo Mahavaranyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namne Gaura Tvishe Namaha. Panchatadvatmakam Krishnam Bhakta Rupa Swarupakam Bhaktavataram Bhaktakyam Namami Bhakti Shaktikam. Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute. Jayatam Surato Pangor Mama Manda Matirgati Matsarva Swapadambojo Radha Manana Mohano. Divya Vrindaranya Kalpa Drumadha Srimad Ratnankara Singha Sanasto Srimad Radha Shila Govinda Devo Prishtali Bi Sevya Manu Smarami Srimad Rasharasarambi Vamshivata Tatastitaha Karshan Venu Swaner Gopir Gopinatha Sriestunaha. Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavanishvari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye. Vrindai Tulsi Devya Priyai Keshavasyacha Vishnu Bhakti Pradi Devi Satyavachai Namo Namaha. Sri Nishinga Jai Nishinga Jai Jai Nanashinga Prahlada Desha Jaya Padma Mukha Padma Pringa Matsamo Nasti Papapma Naparadi Chakashana Parihare Pilajame Kimbruve Purushottavam. Yavatinam Yata Yuni Yunam Cha Yavatau Yata Mano Bhiramate Tadvam Mano Me Ramatantvai Bhumau Skalita Paranam Bhumireva Valambanam Tvai Jata Pararanam Tvameva Sharanam Prabho. Govinda Balabe Radhe Prate Tvam Aham Sada Tvadiyam Iti Janatu Govindo Mam Tvaya Saha. Radhe Vrindavanadishe Karunamrita Vahani Kripaya Nijapadabja Dasyamayam Pradiyatam. Vande Nanda Vajastrinam Padurinam Abhikshnasa Yasam Hari Gato Gitam Punati Bhuvanatrayam. Namastrestam Manamapi Sachiputra Matra Sarupam Shri Rupam Tasya Gaja Maruparim Maturim Goshtavatim. Radha Kundam Girivanamoho Radhika Madhavasham Prapto Yasya Pratita Kripaya Shri Gurum Tannatosmi. Adadana Stridam Danter Idam Jache Puna Puna Srimad Rupa Padambo Chau Rajoham Syam Bhave Bhave Hantaya Madhya Abala Haridasavaryo Yad Rama Krishna Charana Sparasha Pramoda Manam Tanoti Sahago Ganayostayo Yad Paniya Suya Vasakandana Kandamulai. Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasari Gaura Bhaktavinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Go Premanandi, Hare Hare Bo. Okay, Srimad Bhagavatam. This is seventh canto, ninth chapter, Prahlad Maharaj pacifies the Lord with prayers, text number 38. And the verse is, Itandra tiryag rishideva jashavatarer lokan vipava yasihamsi jagat pratipan dharmam mahapurusha pas yuganuvrittam chana kalo yadabhavas triyugotasatvam. Translation. In this way, my Lord, you appear in various incarnations as a human being, an animal, a great saint, a demigod, a fish, and a tortoise, thus maintaining the entire creation in different planetary systems and killing the demoniac principles. According to the age, O my Lord, you protect the principles of religion. In the age of Kali, however, you do not assert yourself as the supreme personality of Godhead, and therefore you are known as Tri Yuga, or the Lord who appears in three yugas. This is the argument that Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya brought up when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to Jagannath Puri. He said, how can he be the supreme personality of Godhead? The Lord only appears in three yugas, and this is Kali Yuga. He doesn't appear in this yuga. And here's the answer to that. Purport. As the Lord appeared just to maintain Lord Brahma from the attack of Madhu and Kaitapa, he also appeared to protect the great devotee Prahalad Maharaj. Similarly, Lord Chaitanya appeared in order to protect the fallen souls of Kali Yuga. There are four yugas or millenniums, Satya, Treta, Dvapara, and Kali. In all the yugas but Kali Yuga, the Lord appears in various incarnations and asserts himself as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But although Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who appears in Kali Yuga, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he never asserted himself as such. On the contrary, whenever Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was addressed as being as good as Krishna, he blocked his ears with his hands, denying his identity with Krishna, because he was playing the part of a devotee. Lord Chaitanya knew that in Kali Yuga there would be many bogus incarnations pretending to be God, and therefore he avoided asserting himself as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was accepted as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, however, in many Vedic literatures, especially the Srimad Bhagavatam 11.5.32. Krishnavarnam tusha krishnam sangopangashtra parshadam jagnai sankirtana prayer yajantihi sumedasaha. In Kali Yuga, intelligent men worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the form of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is always accompanied by his associates such as Nityananda, Advaita, Gadadhar, and Srivas. The entire Krishna consciousness movement is based on the principles of the Sankirtan movement inaugurated by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Therefore, one who tries to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead through the medium of the Sankirtan movement knows everything perfectly. He is Sumedasas, a person with substantial intelligence. So congratulations to all of you for having substantial intelligence. When on Parikram in Vrindavan and going around Govardhan Hill, there is a rule, actually, in Shastra that says that when you're going on Parikram, if you're in pain or you injure yourself, you have to stop your Parikram and go back. And then once you're healed and you feel better, you can take it up again from that spot. But it's an offense, actually, to Giriraj and to go around if you're injured or in pain or something like that. So similarly, in this class, which is going to go for some more hours, if you're feeling uncomfortable sitting the way you're sitting or anything, please make an adjustment so that you feel okay. Is that all right? Be comfortable. Because the Lord doesn't like his devotees to suffer. Yes, yeah. Yeah, Stacy. Can we have the microphones going here because it's being broadcast?
So I'm not suffering.
Yes.
A question.
Yes.
That I missed to ask because George had come through. Not his fault. I turned around and then you'd gone on. When you had talked about giving, I have an opposite experience that maybe you can clarify. I had a family member who offered me some money. And they actually said, if you need something, let me know. But I believe that we need to be independent when we, you know, we're supporting ourselves. But I was in this kind of clinch going on, trying to learn not to suffer through it and let it go. But at the same time, I was practicing receiving. And so I said, and I even was open about it, I said, you know, I'm not going to stop the flow of energy coming my way. I know great things are coming. Sure, I will accept what you have to offer. And so they said, okay, and they were actually at work writing out a check, just being open about it. And, you know, I just said, I'm open to receiving. If you want to give me something, go ahead. If it's a problem, please don't. So they said, yeah, sure. And in the same breath, I'd mentioned some opportunities that were coming up. And at that time, that person had said, oh, well, this is just for food. It don't, you know, I don't want this going anywhere else. And it became a fear of coming to me in a sense. And I didn't want to get into it or criticize or anything about that. So the check arrived, but I never cashed it. And because I didn't want to hurt that person or create limitation. Is that something that I kind of, maybe I just never should have said anything and just let it go and stayed on my own. So no, I haven't cashed it. It didn't feel right. Do you have any response to that?
Do you have, can you formulate it into one question?
Oh, that's what I did. If somebody chooses to give you something, but they have limitation with it.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something to accept, or should you just let it go and just say, let's just leave it there?
It depends who you are and why you're accepting it. So Krishna can do that, and Krishna's representatives can do that. Because as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, I'll give the Sanskrit too, Chaturvida bhajanti mam jana sukritino arjuna arto jignasa artarti gyani cha bharatarshaba. He says, four kinds of people, pious people, approach me. He says, those who are in need of wealth, those who are searching for knowledge, those who are in distress, and those who are wise. And they have motivations, generally. He's naming people who have motivations who come to him and ask. And when they come to Krishna, even if they have some motivation when they approach him, he can purify that motivation. An example is Dhruva Maharaj. Dhruva Maharaj was a young boy. He was the son of a king, but he wasn't the only son of the king. There were others, and he wasn't the main son. So he was refused entrance to his father's affection. He couldn't get on the lap of his father because one of his other queens, one of the king's other queens said, she told Dhruva Maharaj, you can't get up here because you're not born from me, and I'm the main queen. So he became really angry, even though he was 5 years old. He was a little kshatriya, which means he had this blood in him, which was like kingly blood. So he ran to his biological mother and crying hot tears of anger, saying, you know, I've been refused my father's affection, and this other woman has blocked me, and what should I do? And she said, well, great sages go to the forest and they pray to God. He can do anything. I can't help you because I'm not in a position to help, but God can help you.
Hare Krishna.
So he said, that's what I'll do. So he took off for the forest. And on his way to the forest, he met a guru, Narada Muni. And Narada had overheard the conversation. How? Because Krishna is within everyone's heart. And when this conversation between Dhruva Maharaj and his mother was going on, Krishna also informed Narada Muni as a spiritual master to go and assist this boy. That's how he overheard it. So Narada Muni stopped Dhruva Maharaj and said, where are you going? And Dhruva said, I'm going to get a kingdom bigger than my father's. And to do that, I need to meet God. Because he's the only one who can give it to my mother, told me. And Narada Muni tested him. He said, you know, according to Shastra, it's better to be equipoised. It's better just to tolerate these things and go on. And things will even out in the end. Besides, you're just young anyway, and it'll change. Don't worry. And Dhruva Maharaj said, thank you very much, but I'm going anyway. And that was the test he passed. Because then Narada Muni said, boy, he's very serious. And then he gave him instruction how to perform certain kinds of yoga through which he would propitiate the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who could then meet. And he did that with great alacrity. He performed austerities that had never been heard of before in the universe, practically. And at the end of a period of time of performing these austerities, his yogic power became so great that he was able to, by his breathing, he was choking up the air in the universe. And other demigods were becoming worried about this. The Lord said, "Don't worry, I know who it is. It's my devotee doing this." So he went there to meet Dhruva Maharaj. And Dhruva was sitting meditating, and he had fixed the Lord within his heart. Then he opened his eyes, and he saw that same form manifested outside his heart. He had appeared. And that Lord touched him on the head with his conch shell, empowering him to speak beautiful prayers. And in those prayers, he said, "I was seeking broken bits of glass," meaning I had some material desire mixed in to see you. That's why I really wanted to see you, because to fulfill my material desires. That was like broken bits of glass. But now I've got the greatest jewel. And he lamented. He said, "I am in the position of a person who goes before the emperor of the whole world and then asks for the husks of rice. When they husk rice, they get rid of the stuff that's not worth anything. I don't think even the cows will eat it. Maybe they sell it in health food stores nowadays for like $50. But it's useless." So he said, "That's what I was begging for. But when I came before the emperor, what is my position?" He lamented like anything. And he became purified, and he was celebrated as a pure devotee. So he approached the Lord with an ulterior motive. But because he approached Krishna, Krishna's like the sun. He can purify anyone and everything. So he did. So I'm going in a roundabout way to your point, and that is when someone gives charity, if they give it to Krishna, even if they're motivated in some way, or Krishna's representative, it doesn't matter. Just like whether you go give to the postmaster general, or you give to the guy who lives next door to you, but he works for the post office and he wears the postal service outfit, he represents the government. So if you give to either one of them, it'll go back to its destination. So if you give in charity and it goes to Krishna, that purpose can be purified also. And however, in ordinary dealings, when people give, with motivation, and it's not going to Krishna ultimately, then that kind of giving is measured on a scale. Actually, in the Karmakanda, it said if you give to an unworthy person, actually, you can get a bad result. If you give to a qualified person, then you get an equal result in your next life. If you give to a very qualified person, then you get a double result. If you give to a pure devotee, then you get an unlimited result. These things they're measured out. There's actually a tit for tat in the universe, quid pro quo. But as I just mentioned, when you give to somebody who's representing the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even if you accidentally give, there's some really good result there. So, when the devotees go out on Sankirtan and they're collecting donations, and when I was talking about taking money from Sean, that comes back and we give it to Krishna. It's that we don't touch any of the money. It's for him.
So I should give the check to you.
Yeah, give me the check.
In all fun, Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna.
Yeah, you can pass it on to Krishna. Hare Krishna. That's the idea of karma yoga, actually. When you realize that anything I touch in this world, actually, I become culpable for that. So I don't want to touch anything anymore. I'll just pass it on. I have to work. I can't stop working. So I'll keep working, but the fruit, I won't even touch it. Durena hivaram karma. Krishna says, keep that far away from you. That stuff's poison. That's what he says. Durena hivaram karma. Keep it way far away from you. Hivaram karma. It's bad for you. It'll poison you. So whatever result you're getting, keep it away. Keep it away. How do you keep it away? Give it to Krishna. And if you can't give it to Krishna, give it to somebody. Actually, this is also in the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says, if you can't give to me, if you can't give to my devotees, then give to some good cause. Because giving in itself awakens a propensity that's naturally dormant within the soul to give. We are giving units, actually. That's what we are. We're servants. That's what it means, Nitya Krishna Das. Das means little givers. Like yesterday when we were going to shop to shop, everyone's working everywhere you go. And I was realizing, looking in those little shops, everyone's just serving somebody. How many nail places do you have to have in the world? It's unbelievable. Every place we went, there's people having their nails done. I had no idea. But they're all serving somebody, you know, like menial servants, like do your nails. Another guy's picking out carpet for somebody. You know, sure, they get a little money back, but, you know, they're serving. So if we learn that propensity, how good it gives to feel, how good it feels to give, then and we continue that, ultimately that leads to giving to Krishna. That's the idea. And now, when you give, you also have to realize how important it is who you give to. That was my original point, right? Now, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Bhuktaram Jagatapasam. He says, I'm the supreme taker. I'm the supreme taker. He can take and take and take unlimitedly. And when you give to Krishna, then you also get benefit at the same time.
I think that's where it belongs. Because even just prior to that, I felt kind of enveloped in the Supreme Conscious and knowing that everything is fine. It already is. All my problems are already solved. And I don't have any, so I wasn't bringing that to the table. Yeah. And I think I really need, even though she's so generous at the same time, and then when I said,
So then that person will...
I need to give it away. It's just, it's not meant for... It's going to help both of us.
It's a good realization, and that person will get what's called a Gyata Sukriti. They gave, and it gets passed on to Krishna, so they get this kind of spiritual benefit that they weren't even expecting. They didn't even know about it, and it'll surface somewhere in their life. It'll come out. There's a story about giving that Prabhupada tells... you know, traditionally in India, there's this process called madhukari. Madhu means a bee, madhu. So the bee goes around from one flower to the next. He doesn't take much from each one, just a little bit. And then he goes to the next one, next one, next one, next one. And then he gets a big bunch of pollen, takes it back to the hive, and they use it, you know, for whatever they use it for. And then, sadhus, you know, spiritual people, they give up the world, they retire, and then they do what's called madhukari. And instead of working for a living, just to eat every day, they go for a little time from one door to the next, and they collect a few things. Everyone will give them like a piece of bread or something like that. And then they have enough. And then the rest of the time they can just do spiritual activity. So students are meant to do that, to build character. They go around and they collect and they bring all it back and they give to their spiritual master. And they live a very simple life. They don't keep or touch anything. So one of these students was going around doing this madhukari one day. And there was a man and a woman married inside the house having a big fight. They were angry at each other. So when he came and knocked on the door, the man called out from the back of the house, "Who is it at the door?" And the woman said, "You know, it's some beggar." And she was angry, bad mood. So he said, "Get rid of him. Give him some ashes and tell him to go away." So she went to the stove where they, you know, they keep the house warm at that time. She dig out a little packet full of ashes and say, "Here's your donation. Now get out of here. Don't come back." That happens. We went in a liquor store the other day, shop to shop. We were going one. First place was a acupuncture place. The woman was from China. She was really happy. She bought a Bhagavad Gita. Then we went to a hair salon. And the lady who owned the hair salon, she bought a book, and then all the customers bought a book. And then we got bold, and there was a liquor store. He said, "Let's go in the liquor store." So we go in the liquor store, and the lady's looking at us. It was Malini, Priya, and myself. So we walk in, and she's looking at us. She goes, "What do you want?" And I said, "Here, we're showing these books," and I handed out one of those little packets of books. She grabbed it and threw it on her desk, and she goes, "Now get out." I said, but, she said, "Get out now." So that's how that lady was, you know, when the brahmachari was going door to door, and she gave ashes and said, "Now get out of here." So the brahmachari, being very intelligent, knew this principle that if you give it to Krishna, then it gets purified. So he took the ashes back to the temple, and you know you can use ashes to polish brass. And in worshiping Krishna, we use a lot of brass. So he gave it to the pujari, or the priest who takes care of the deity's paraphernalia and said, use this, use these ashes to polish up the brass. And so the Pujari said, okay. And every day he'd take the ashes and polish up the brass. And then as that was happening, simultaneously, those householders, they were feeling their heart getting polished, purified. And then months later, this brahmachari was doing madhukari again and forgot which neighborhood he was in, went back to the same door. That happens too. It happened to me in Washington, D.C. We met this lady who was a Jehovah's Witness. She was at her mailbox. Veda Vitt was there. He came all the way from Pennsylvania to join the party. So she was at her mailbox with a McDonald's bag and getting her mail, and I showed her a Bhagavad Gita, and she started telling me how, well, she was a Jehovah's Witness, and she said that actually she didn't believe in karma because she said actually the soul dies. It doesn't actually survive. Anyway, we had this back and forth, and then she went in her house, and I didn't know which house she went in, so when we were coming around, I knocked on the same door, and she opened the door. There she was again. So this brahmachari did the same thing. He went back to the same house, but this time, when the woman opened the door, she remembered him. They had actually felt remorse for treating him the way they did, because they felt purified. And when he came to the door, they both, husband and wife, came and fell at his feet, said, please forgive us for what we did. We would like to give you a substantial donation, and how can we be more involved in this process of devotional service? So this is called Agyata Sukriti. Even unknowingly, unwittingly, someone gives something to Krishna. Or, for that matter, we know from the Namashtakam, Jayanamadeha Munivrindagehe Janaranjanaya Paramakshara Krite Tumararadapimanagudiritam Nikilogratapa Patalimvalumpasi. This verse says that if someone, even out of spite, says Hare Krishna, they just say, Hare Krishna, go to hell. You know, they get the benefit, Rupa Goswami says, for saying Hare Krishna. The go to hell part, it just gets, Krishna doesn't look at it. Just like when Putana, she was a great demoness. She was sent by King Kamsa, who wanted to kill Krishna. And she smeared deadly poison on her breast when Krishna was a baby. And she came in like a nursemaid. And they let her in, and she picked up Krishna, and her whole idea was, I'm going to kill the kid with the poison. And when he sucked the poison, then he sucked the milk, then he sucked out her life air and killed her, this demoness. But because Krishna is all-merciful, even though she had intended to kill him by giving this poisonous breast, he only accepted the part that, well, she approached me as a mother. So when she attained liberation in her next life, her position was in the spiritual world as a kind of mother for Krishna, eternally. So Krishna, when you give to Krishna, he sorts it out. And that's the benefit of giving everything to Krishna. We can't touch it. When we touch it, it becomes toxic. No matter how, just like King Nriga, he was really into giving. But he was giving not for pleasing Krishna, but actually for developing sukriti, karma, for himself to be happy in the material world. And he used to give away cows all the time to Brahmins. And as he gave more and more and more cows away, he was piling up this kind of karma that he could enjoy in the material world. And accidentally once, one of the cows that he had given away wandered back into his original herd, and then he gave it away twice to a different person, gave it away to another person. And the original person said, wait a minute, that was my cow. And they said, no, he gave it to me. And they had a fight, and the bad karma went to Nriga, the person who was giving the charity. So when it came time to balance out his sukriti, his good karma and his bad karma, he said, I'll take my bad karma first because there can't be much. But it was significant. He had to take birth as a lizard, actually, in his next life.
Just a mistake? An absent-minded mistake?
Yeah, but the point was, because he was in the material realm, he wasn't giving to Krishna, he was giving... So point is, give everything to Krishna. Yet karoshi arashna shi yet johasi didasi yet yet tapasyasi kuntiya tat kurushva mararpanam. Krishna says in the Gita, whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer, give away, and even whatever austerities you perform, do it for me. And then next verse he says, shubha shubha palayari evam mukshase karma pandanai. So that means shubha and ashubha means what's auspicious and inauspicious in this world. It's all bad, actually. Only things that are transcendental are accepted by devotees. So everything becomes transcendentalized when you give it to Krishna. So that's one of the longest answers in history to a very short question. But there you have it. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Is there a microphone on somewhere? Because I hear... Oh, it's that one. Okay. All right, so here's the purport. Did I read that? Yes, I did. Here's the Srimad Bhagavatam 11th canto. We're finding Lord Chaitanya in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And now we're going to hear from Karabhajana Muni. Krishna Varnam Tusha Krishnam Sangopangasha Parshadam Jagne Sankanana Praya Yajantihi Sumedha Saha. Can someone give the number of that? 11:05:32. Okay. In the Kali Yuga, intelligent persons perform congregational chanting to worship the incarnation of Godhead who constantly sings the names of Krishna. Although his complexion is not blackish, he is Krishna himself. He is accompanied by his associates, servants, weapons, and confidential companions. Purport. This same verse is quoted by Krishnadas Kaviraj in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila, chapter 3, verse 52. His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, has given the following commentary. That's what we just read. Okay, now the next verse. Deyam sada paribhavagnam abhishtadoham tirtaspadam shiva varinchi nutam sharanyam vrityartiham pranatapala pababdipotam vande maha purushate charanaravindam. This verse is 11:05:33. And this is also about Lord Chaitanya. And here's the translation. My dear Lord, you are the Mahapurusha, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and I worship your lotus feet, which are the only eternal object of meditation. Those feet destroy the embarrassing condition of material life and freely award the greatest desire of the soul, the attainment of pure love of Godhead. My dear Lord, your lotus feet are the shelter of all holy places and of all saintly authorities in the line of devotional service and are honored by powerful demigods like Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma. My Lord, you are so kind that you willingly protect all those who simply bow down to you with respect, and thus you mercifully relieve all the distress of your servants. In conclusion, my Lord, your lotus feet are actually the suitable boat for crossing over the ocean of birth and death, and therefore, even Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva seek shelter at your lotus feet. Before I read the commentaries on that, we have another song coming up. Dainini Prabhu, we're going to need a kartalist on this.